Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
We bit the apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but...
Yeah, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the great Dar Williams singing the Solartopia song with Pete Seeger and David Burns. Back again for you with another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. This is Harvey Wasserman talking to you from sunny, well, it's not so sunny today, Central Ohio, where we just had a major conference on shutting Diablo Canyon, getting away from King Kong coal, oil, nukes, and gas, and getting towards, forward, into the green-powered age of Solartopia, our green-powered Earth. We have today a great expert with us. Ned Ford lives in the Cincinnati area and has testified and studied and written and pontificated and analyzed the energy situation around the country, and especially in Ohio, for many decades. We're going to have him for the full hour. And what we're going to do is we're going to go through a serious history of what has happened to energy in the Buckeye State here, because what happens in Ohio sooner or later happens anywhere. And I'm afraid, I hate to tell you folks, but at this point in time, it is not a pretty picture. Ned Ford, glad to have you with us.
Hi, Harvey. How are you?
I'm great. I'm really great now that you're on the line. It's a good feeling. So we got a full hour here to explain. I was very, very impressed with your talk. We had, as mentioned, a conference over the weekend here in Columbus on the energy situation in Ohio, which is no small potatoes in its own right, and also, of course, a bellwether state, as it always has been for much of the rest of what happens around the United States. And as mentioned, it has not been a pretty picture. At this point in time, the Ohio legislature and the governor, I guess it's safe to say, are on the warpath against renewable energy. But Ned, you are the leading in many ways expert on the transition of energy in Ohio. And as I say, this has national impact. What happens here is instructive, especially in the Midwest, since we have a corporate Republican domination of the state, as is true in Florida, Wisconsin, Indiana, parts of Pennsylvania, parts of Illinois, many other states, and certainly out in the Great Plains area, Kansas, Nebraska, down into Texas. We have some serious corporate Koch brother money pouring in to impact the energy situation here. Ned, can you sort of sum up where we stand right now with energy transition in Ohio, and then maybe we can talk about where we've been and get back to where we need to go?
Yeah, Harvey, with a long history of being one of the most coal-intensive states in the country, Ohio dabbled in energy efficiency programs back in the 90s. We spent about half a billion dollars. We spent $140 million and saved about $500 million back in the early 90s, but then we killed the programs. I won't go into that because it's really ancient history and it's only interesting to those of us who want to know where we got to how we got to where we are today. In 2007, the legislature was gearing up to replace a freeze on electric rates that was caused by a 1998 bill that attempted to deregulate the state. Within 2 years of passage of that bill, 15% of the industrial energy users in the state of Ohio were out of business. The legislature put a freeze on the rates, And then in 2007, that 10-year freeze was about to expire, so they started holding hearings. And what resulted was a bill that was 120 pages long in draft form, and had three pages in it that dealt with energy efficiency and renewables. Actually, three paragraphs dealt with energy efficiency, and the rest of 2.5 pages dealt with renewables. The rest of it was all deregulation, and that's kind of important for background, but I don't know how much we can get into today.
Ned, we will have time to get into that. Well, I do want to do it in some detail because it's a very, very important piece of our history nationwide and in Ohio. But if you can give us an executive summary up front of where we are now, then I'd like to go back with you, if you don't mind, since we do have a full hour, and go through
that
the history
great.
Of what happened here, because this is critically important stuff, and you have been with it right from the start and done the great detailed analysis.
That sounds great. The long story short, 2008, we passed the law, and it required electric utilities, the distribution companies that we all know, the people who send us our bills, are required to run energy efficiency programs, and the generation companies who we don't know are required to get a certain percentage of their energy from renewable power. And to make it, to kind of show you where we're at today and why there's conflict over this, we have 6 years now, and the Public Utilities Commission has not yet reported on the simple question of how much does this cost and how much is it saved. And if they had done that, we wouldn't have been dealing with 2 years of hearings in the legislature where a lot of people are claiming that the price of renewable power is very high and nobody is talking about the benefits of energy efficiency. And legislation has already put a 2-year freeze on these programs. So I'm going to tell you just briefly what the utility filings tell us about efficiency, and then we can start talking around the edges of that. In a nutshell, there are four regulated utilities that serve 88% of the customers in Ohio. First Energy is the one that does Cleveland and Toledo and Youngstown area, all of northern Ohio. American Electric Power serves kind of a disaggregate service area that is Columbus and southeast Ohio and over to Lima. And then Duke is in Cincinnati and Dayton is in Dayton Power and Light is in Dayton. Those are the four regulated distribution companies, and those are the people who run the efficiency programs. In 6 years, they've spent $830 million, and they have already installed hardware that is going to save over $5 billion by the time it wears out. It's already saved $1.8 billion, and that is more than the total cost of the efficiency plus the renewable programs. So it's a win-win for everybody except a few people who really have an axe to grind or somebody who thinks that the world needs to be made safe for the natural gas industry, which is doing all the fracking.
Okay, and so where does that leave us now in terms of what's happening with energy in Ohio?
Well, last year, after about a year of hearings, again, what I said was that they kept asking the question, what are these efficiency and renewable programs doing for us, and never getting the answer because the Public Utilities Commission will not publish those figures. I can go and look those up. You can go and look them up and spend about a week compiling 6 years' worth of utility reports. But the commission should do that, and they should just eliminate the confusion that exists. And they're actually required by law to do that, and they haven't done it. So last year, the legislature passed a bill that puts the efficiency programs on freeze. It means that they will not expand according to the schedule that they were originally supposed to expand on. And it essentially kills renewable energy. And there was a separate dirty deed that I hold Governor Kasich responsible for. In the budget bill, about 3 weeks after this bill passed, he changed the siting. And previously, the siting requirements for a wind turbine had, if you wanted to rent your land out to somebody who wanted to build a wind turbine, turbine had to be a quarter of a mile away from any inhabited dwelling that was not on your personal property. The budget amendment last year changed that to a quarter of a mile away from the property line. And that doesn't sound like a big deal, but it actually renders most of the good land in Ohio that is appropriate to develop wind on not useful, because they can't build within a quarter of a mile of property line. They can build turbines, but they can't build big farms that are economic and valuable.
Let me ask you, is this law that Governor Kasich put into, now we're talking about Governor John Kasich, governor of Ohio, Republican, former U.S. congressman, former Fox News commentator, close confidant of Rupert Murdoch and the Koch brothers. He put this law into effect that has effectively killed the wind industry in Ohio. Is there any ecological, economic, or public health justification for this law that he put into effect?
Well, let me put it to you this way. If you put a quarter of a mile property line restriction on the fracking industry, there would be no fracking in Ohio. And fracking actually represents a theft of the mineral resources of the neighbors, because you cannot take your natural gas out from under your land without it seeping in from underneath the neighbor's property. The wind turbine, on the other hand, there is no appreciable degradation of the wind beyond a couple hundred feet from the turbine, and that's why they're sited closer than a quarter of a mile. I don't know exactly how close they site them, but there is no theft of property. There is no intrusion of property rights. Of course, a wind turbine is a big visual thing. At a quarter of a mile, it's not that big. And the real question here is, what's good for Ohio? For most of the people who want to build wind farms, they're farmers who have a lot of land. They rent out 5% of their land. They double their revenue per acre. And they go on using the land for whatever they were using it before. Ohio
and
has the potential
and
to generate.
And crops can grow right up to the base of a windmill.
Yeah, and they usually clear away a pad of, you know, 25 or 50 feet around the base of the turbine. But the most important thing to understand here is that Ohio has the potential to generate 2.25 times as much electricity as it uses entirely with wind, that will produce enough wind. I don't want to get too technical here, but wind is measured in capacity factor, and a 35% capacity factor is considered really good. All of the wind turbines that have been installed in Ohio so far are well over that. All of the wind turbines that Ohio would ever need, there's plenty of resource that's over 30% capacity factor. You are obviously interested in the Lake Erie wind, and the lakeshore wind is the best wind sighting in the state of Ohio, but we don't need it. We don't need to compete with the people who want to live on the lakeshore. And if Lake Erie wind can be developed and it proves economic, that'll be wonderful. I think Lake Erie wind will actually be more valuable for people in Pennsylvania and New York who do not have the same onshore wind resources that Ohio does, but that's my personal opinion. The fact is that we shouldn't be setting up arbitrary barriers to this stuff before we even know how it works, and especially not doing it in a way that winds up being a gift to a different industry that probably isn't as valuable as people are making it out to be.
Right. So let's clarify this now, because we're talking about a major factor in the America's energy supply, which is the wind resource along the southern region, not just the southern shore, but the southern region of Lake Erie. If you look at a wind map of the United States, you look at Lake Erie, you see that in the middle of Lake Erie, it is as good as it gets, basically. There is not much better wind resource in the world than there is in the middle of Lake Erie. Lake Erie does have the advantage of being relatively shallow, and the areas that we would put in windmills, although windmills may start to be anchored not in the ground, but a little more complicated with some flotational devices. But nonetheless, the good wind in Lake Erie is also reasonably close to the major metropolitan areas of Cleveland, Buffalo, Erie, Toronto, Detroit. And so once our country comes to its senses, if it ever happens, there will be a huge use of the wind resource in Lake Erie. But what we're talking about now with Ned Ford, our resident expert here on renewables and efficiency in Ohio, is that the northern area, the Ohio north of Columbus, is flat. It's agricultural. There's plenty of open land. And there's a key factor is that there's a lot of transmission, and the electricity doesn't have far to go. So that and the resource, as Ned just mentioned, is very powerful. So we could have billions of dollars of wind investments in northern Ohio that would drastically affect, in a good way, the energy supply. And the governor of Ohio has gone in and essentially, almost gratuitously, killed it, and losing all the jobs, losing the great development money that would be available to the citizens of Ohio. Is that hyperbole, Ned, or is that a fair thing to say?
Well, the governor didn't do it by himself. He had a lot of legislators help him. But yes, that's exactly what's going on. The Senate Bill 310 was the bill that was passed last year, and it puts what they call a freeze on the industry. If the legislature does not take further action, that freeze goes away, and that law permits renewables and efficiency to resume as they should have been this year. But that won't happen unless this wind siting provision is turned back to the way it was before. And I want to make that really clear. It's not like there wasn't a wind siting provision before. They just increased it to the point where it stops being viable.
And there's really no logical, ecological, economic, public health mandate or impetus to put that law into place. It's just basically Ohio to the wind industry, drop dead.
Yeah, let me put this into perspective, Harvey. When I started doing this, I was interested in energy efficiency as a means to reduce acid rain. I personally did not believe in global warming, and renewable energy was way, way, way too expensive. So over the years, I have been paying close attention to the dynamics. I have learned enough about global warming to make me take it very seriously. But the long story short is that I'm still interested in the economics of this. And that's where everybody else claims to be and where we all should be, but we're not. If we were interested in the economics, we would be doing twice as much efficiency today as we are. Ohio is not at the vanguard of clean energy. As much as I love my state, I have to concede that we're in the middle of the pack, and we were a little ahead of the middle of the pack in 2014, but we lost ground because of the freeze. States around us, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Illinois, New York, they're all ahead of us. When you go to the legislative hearings, you hear them talk about Kentucky and West Virginia and South Carolina and how much Ohio is ahead of those states. Well, that's true. But don't we want to be ahead of those states? Those are not industrialized states. They're not wealthy states. And they, frankly, don't have a lot of renewable resources. There are not a lot of places in West Virginia where you can site wind turbines and get a good return on your money. And so we're in Ohio, which is about 5% of the market in the entire United States. It's one of the dirtiest states. And over the last 5 years, we have cut carbon pollution about 5%, about 6.5% if you include the wind. And the cut comes with a huge economic benefit. It comes at a cost that is somewhere around one-fifth of the price of generating the electricity that we would otherwise have to use.
We're talking with Ned Ford about the energy situation in Ohio, which is quite astonishing and very important for the country as a whole. I want to give a little background here. We had a Democratic governor, Ted Strickland, who was a pretty good friend of the utility industry. He wasn't any radical by any chance, any stretch of the imagination. But in 2008, there was a huge grassroots upheaval in the state and with the legislature, and we got a tremendous bipartisan bill passed that seemed to put Ohio at least somewhat ahead of the pack in terms of converting to renewables and efficiency. And Ned, I want to go back and visit that bill in a minute with you and go over it in some detail so that our listeners, I want this show to stay as an archival record of what has happened in Ohio. And then in 2010, Governor Kasich was selected. We have serious issues about how he became governor in the so-called election of 2010, but it suffices to say that he got at least a $1 million check from Rupert Murdoch in the very last days of the campaign and has also been supported by the Koch brothers and other luminaries of the right. And one of the very first things he did stepping into the state house was to kill, and this is hard to say even, but Ohio had been granted $400 million of federal money to restore passenger service between Cleveland, Columbus, Dayton, and Cincinnati. Now, Columbus is a very large metropolitan area, and it is the largest capital city in the Western world. It has neither passenger rail coming into it or light rail within the city. The last passenger train left Columbus, Ohio in 1979, for God's sakes. And people were overjoyed that we finally got this money. And not only would people be able to commute between Cleveland, Cincinnati, Columbus, and Dayton from inside the state, but also people from outside the state would actually be able to come to Columbus and Dayton by rail. And Governor Kasich, who has always been a big promoter of his reputation, self-reputed worker as a for jobs and development in Ohio, just killed this for no apparent reason whatsoever. Never had a public hearing, never gave a real comprehensive public explanation, just told the federal government to keep their $400 million. Absolutely staggering to me, living in Columbus, Ohio. But even if I didn't, makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And so as a result, we still have no passenger rail service between Dayton, Columbus, and the rest of the world, and no foreseeable possibility that it's ever going to come here. And there's also no internal light rail. There's no light rail commuting in central Ohio, even though the traffic situation on the freeways is getting quite serious. The governor then mortgaged the Ohio Turnpike. And I don't know the numbers. Ned, do you know the numbers of how much money he took out of the Ohio Turnpike?
Yeah, I don't follow transportation that closely.
Okay, but he took a ton of money, and he then turned around and used all that money, having mortgaged the future of the Ohio Turnpike, to, you know, upgrade, put in bigger underpasses and overpasses and interchanges and all around the state, creating, of course, a lot of temporary jobs and touting himself as a huge creator of jobs, ignoring the fact that people will be paying the toll for that on the turnpikes for years and years to come. And then the hammer really came down. And the House and the Senate, you have to understand that the majority of voters in Ohio are Democrats and vote Democratic in national elections and in senatorial elections. We have a liberal Democratic U.S. Senator. Sherrod Brown in the state has gone twice now for Barack Obama. It also went for John Kerry in 2004, if you actually counted the votes, but since we didn't, it went for George Bush. But nonetheless, the hammer came down, and the governor and the legislature decimated our pro-renewable energy bill that had been passed in 2008. And so what I'd like you to do, Ned, if you could, Ned Ford, our resident expert here, is explain to us, if you could, what the bill said in 2008 that paved the way for renewables and efficiency in the state of Ohio, and then what the legislature and the governor did to it after 2010. Is that a reasonable assignment for the next few minutes?
Let me start and see how far we get.
All right, let's do that.
The original bill said it set forth a schedule, and each year the electric utilities need to achieve energy efficiency equivalent to the given percentage. And that percentage started off at 0.3%, and it rose in an irregular way to 1% where it is today. And the bill is supposed to go to 2% in the year 2019. With the two-year freeze, it will do so in 2021. But that's not realistic. It's not realistic for the utilities to go from 1% to 2% in a single year. What we were doing before the legislative attack started was we were gradually moving forward, and that way we would have been in a position to make that move more easily. Each utility has to develop programs. They have to try out new areas of program activity. Now, these programs are, if you go to the hardware store and buy a high-efficiency light bulb, an LED, or a compact fluorescent, in most of the state, that light bulb is discounted by your utility. Depending on where you live, they may actually put a sign in the store, or they may do it anonymously. You can also get kits, weatherization kits from the utilities. You can get discounted light bulbs. And if you go to, let's say you need a new air conditioner, or if you need a new refrigerator or dishwasher, those products may very well have, the higher efficiency models will have a bigger discount on them because of the utility programs. Now, only a third of the electricity in Ohio is used by residential customers. So we go to stores, we work in offices, and we buy stuff that's made in factories. And these programs also apply to all of those energy users. In fact, the biggest bang for the buck is in the commercial sector, where commercial lighting is done on a huge scale. And it's very easy to go into a large building and retrofit those lights, come out with 50% to 60% savings on the electric bill. And there is no sign of tapping out the bottom of the barrel for efficiency potential. Other states have been running programs at the same level that Ohio has been doing for over 30 years. And, for example, I'm a little reluctant to use California as an example, but this is a good indicator. They've been running programs for 25 years when the natural gas crisis hit back in the year 2000-2001. Remember when Enron was manipulating the price of natural gas, and the California electricity market is supplied mostly by natural gas generators, so it really hurt them, drove prices up nearly double what they are here in Ohio. And the upshot of having run these efficiency programs for 25 years was that everybody knew where the products were. And within 8 months, the state of California cut its electricity consumption by 7% using energy efficiency products and processes that probably wouldn't have happened that fast if they hadn't been running all those programs. So I say that because a lot of people say that this is we're skimming the cream off the top of the soup and we're not going to be able to do this for very long. But there's no evidence that we're going to run low on efficiency anytime soon. And the average cost of efficiency is about 1.7 cents per kilowatt hour in Ohio. Our retail price for electricity is just a little over 10 cents per kilowatt hour.
So that's a opportunity savings.
Yeah, it's actually probably the strongest economic stimulus in the state of Ohio. And we may disagree about small parts of this thing, but we can't have a rational public discussion if the Public Utilities Commission won't report the actual numbers. Because I can tell you, I just did, $830 million spent, $5 billion saved. That is something that anybody can figure out, but nobody's going to believe it if I say it.
And I do
believe it. Well, thank you,
Ned. I want to interrupt and tell you that I do believe what you just said.
Well, I really appreciate that, and I'm more than happy to prove it to anybody who is skeptical. But the problem is that it should be the state agency that's responsible for our electric utility industry that does this, and they should tell the legislature, and the legislature should deal with that set of facts when they're monkeying around with this major industry. Electricity is a $14 billion industry in Ohio, and that's a fair chunk of our state economy. When you fool around with it, you hurt people. And Ohio's had enough bad times. you'll love this one, Harvey. The fact of the matter is that Northern Ohio was in its own private mini-recession due to the Perry and Davis-Bessey and Beaver Valley nuclear costs that were put into their rates. For almost 20 years, the Northern Ohio utilities were charged, the average rate of electricity up there was in the top 20 most expensive utilities in the entire country because of those three nuclear plants. And so when the Great Recession came along in 2007 and 2008, Northern Ohio was already in a recession. Why do you think there were so many homes repossessed and so much economic havoc? It's because we didn't pay enough attention to our electricity costs and opportunities, and we didn't make the right decisions. But we're headed into another era where we're going to do the same thing. A whole lot of the old coal plants are shutting down because they're no longer economic, and the natural gas industry is very eager to build new natural gas plants and lock us in decades worth of dependence on another fossil fuel. Frankly, I don't think they can produce. We don't have any clear sign that they can increase natural gas production by 50%, which is what they need to do. And if there's one other issue that I think we should touch on this hour. Many of your listeners may have heard of the Clean Power Plan or the US EPA's proposal to reduce carbon in the electric sector. The Clean Power Plan calls for approximately 30% reduction in carbon from the electric sector across the board, but it gives a different number for each state. And the number for Ohio is still up for grabs. The rules are not final. They're going to come out this summer. And the rules give Ohio two different ways of picking its goal, and it's either 28 or 29% reduction in carbon. We've already achieved some of that. Depends on which year you start from. The proposed rules start from 2012, so it's a pretty big bite. but they may soften that by going to an earlier year because Ohio has seen, through the recession and through the natural gas shift, we've seen a lot of carbon cuts. Long story short, starting last fall, the Public Utilities Commission began talking about how they had analyzed the Clean Power Plan, and they had found that it would be extremely expensive for the state of Ohio to meet the Clean Power Plan using 100% natural gas. Well, the first thing to say about that is that there is no analysis. The Public Utilities Commission does not have anything in writing to justify what they have testified to the legislature about and what they have said to in comments, formal comments to the U.S. EPA on the Clean Power Plan. There is no study. There is no analysis. They just put together a fairly accurate assessment of 100% natural gas response to the Clean Power Plan. Well, the trouble with that is we don't have the natural gas plants, and in order to do that, we'd have to build them. And that would cost $10 billion.
And then we also have to guarantee that there is enough natural gas to continue doing this. I've read a lot of stuff that indicates there's not.
Well, we would have to increase the state's consumption of natural gas by 50%.
But we have to increase the production as well.
Well, we're not producing our natural gas by a long shot. The fracking industry has doubled Ohio's production of natural gas in the last 3 years. It's doubled from 10% of what we consume to 20% of what we consume. And everything else you hear about natural gas in Ohio is not true. Now, Pennsylvania, for example, they actually are producing a lot of natural gas, but Ohio is not.
And, of course, they're doing it in a way that destroys the earth. Those of you who have seen Josh Silver's movie, Josh Fox's movie, I'm sorry, Gasland, horrifying movie. I think he's making a sequel, actually. Let's just put it this way. We do not want to set up a future that's dependent on natural gas. It makes no sense economically and ecologically. It would be charitable to call it suicidal. And you're saying that in order to build the infrastructure to do that, even just to build the plants, forget about the supply, Ned Ford, it would cost us $10 billion. Is that correct?
Right. Just to build the power plants that are needed to burn that natural gas, to produce that share of electricity. And there's a trick in there that you have to understand. Natural gas is not carbon free. Natural gas is about 55% of the carbon dioxide per megawatt hour or kilowatt hour as coal is. So in order to fulfill the fantasy of a 100% solution to the Clean Power Plan with natural gas, you have to shut down the entire coal industry in Ohio. I don't know whether the coal industry has just gone home and decided to play cards until they get called to their maker, but they're certainly not paying attention to this the way I would think they do. The other part of this, and this goes right back to what we've been talking about this entire show, is the Public Utilities Commission hasn't looked at all at the impact of the existing efficiency and renewable standards on carbon. If they had, they would have found that we don't need to pass any new laws and we don't need to spend any new money. Because if we just leave the standards intact, even with the 2-year freeze, we still overcomply with the final Clean Power Plan requirements. We cut carbon more than is necessary. The other day, a friend of mine was critical of me for saying that because he didn't want me to make it sound like it's too easy. But let's be very clear about this. The Clean Power Plan is not by any stretch the only carbon reduction we need. And I don't particularly want to try and get into arguing about carbon and climate change on this show. We can come back and do that another day. But if it is necessary, then it is necessary to do it as cost-effectively as possible. And this is the way to do it. We're already doing it. We've already done a remarkable job in 6 years. And frankly, the utilities deserve a lot of credit that they're not getting. You might find that strange coming from an environmentalist, but the utilities have really done a tremendous job of implementing both the efficiency and renewables provisions in the law.
Well, are you including FirstEnergy in that?
I am absolutely including FirstEnergy. The difference between FirstEnergy and the others is that FirstEnergy corporate leadership is in the generation arm of the company. And under Ohio law, these companies are supposed to have segregated their generation from their distribution. But FirstEnergy hasn't done a very good job of doing that. Some people have actually taken them to court over their failure to segregate those two aspects. And they should probably be in a lot more trouble than they are right now because they've done some pretty bad things.
Now, I want to clarify for our listeners. FirstEnergy is the owner of the Davis-Besse nuclear plant, and they have just filed for a major rate hike. We've talked about it before on this show to continue funding their Davis-Besse nuke, which is losing money, as well as a 50-year-old coal burner, which is almost comical that they're doing that, but they are.
Well, let's be realistic. We're not going to stop people consuming electricity. It has to come from somewhere. And you and I are both as unhappy about Davis-Besse as we could possibly be. Neither of us have a lot of respect for FirstEnergy in the big picture, but I want you to understand that once the ground was broken on the efficiency programs, FirstEnergy did a pretty darn good job. And they can do more. They will do more if we don't give them a better way to make money. And this is what it's all about. This is where it breaks down to. People think we should be able to tell these utilities to save us energy and build renewables for us without being paid for it. That isn't how the world works. We can pay them a very small share of what is saved with energy efficiency and cover all their costs for doing renewables. But the simple fact of the matter is that right now we're paying them very handsomely for using dirty power.
But are you saying, Ned Ford, that the utilities in Ohio, these are not guys riding white horses wearing white hats. Are you saying that they are actually making money and have been sufficiently subsidized or, shall we say, bribed to do the right thing with energy efficiency? And if that's the case, is this a model for the rest of the country?
No, it is among many models. As I said, Ohio was 18th in the nation for energy efficiency in our best year, which was 2012, I think, 2011 or 2012. We've fallen considerably backwards. We're well below 25 right now. The best state programs, there are six states right now which are very close to double the annual rate of efficiency savings that Ohio is as a percentage of their total electric consumption.
What states are they?
It's California, Massachusetts, Washington State, Oregon, Vermont. Should have said Vermont first. They're really a leader. I believe Delaware, and there's one other that I can't. It changes from year to year, so I don't have this year's list in my mind.
Okay.
But anybody can look it up online. It's the American Council for Energy Efficient Economy. It publishes a list of the states. And it's something that we should be more familiar with. But I'm not saying we're bribing the utilities to doing anything. I'm saying we're paying them for service delivered. And we should be paying them on a contract that rewards good performance, which other states do. We don't do that here in Ohio. In Ohio, we pay them on a cost-plus basis. We give them a percentage of what they spend. And anybody who was alive in the 1990s will remember the big fracas over the military cost overruns and the $1,200 hammer and the $14,000 toilet seat. That was because contractors were paid as a percentage of what they charged the military for. That's exactly how we do electricity in Ohio and in about half the other states right now. We need to go beyond that. And one of the ways we do that is to say, okay, this is what electricity costs, and what can we do that's cheaper? And if it doesn't get paid under the existing paradigm, let's modify the paradigm. So that's what we need to do. The utilities get their money back for doing efficiency, but they don't make a profit on it unless the Public Utilities Commission decides to do so. And the profit that they need to make it attractive to them is very small. It's about 4% of the savings they create with these efficiency programs. But we have people who have different opinions about it, and the Public Utilities Commission has not exhibited leadership in establishing a principle that the utility should be paid for saving their customers' money. And that's where we need to go.
Talking with Ned Ford here, leading expert on energy efficiency, renewables, and the general utility picture. One of the few people I've met who actually understands what's going on with the utilities in general and, of course, in the state of Ohio. I can't believe it, Ned, but we're down our last 13 minutes. Ohio is facing a huge crossroads. That's one of the most cliched phrases in all of the English language, but we are facing a huge crossroads here with three rate hikes that have been proposed by the major three of the four major utilities in Ohio, AEP, American Electric Power, Duke, and First Energy, to subsidize or to force ratepayers to pay for continued operations at numerous coal plants and, most importantly in our world, the Davis-Besse nuclear plant. And the Public Utility Commission of Ohio has so far gone 2-for-3 and turned down two major rate requests, one from Duke and one from AEP. Now looking at another rate request, this one from First Energy, which would raise, by some estimates, $3 billion and prolong the lives of the Samus coal-burning plant, which is about a half-century old, and the Davis nuclear plant, notorious throughout the world for being held together with duct tape and baling wire. What do you want to say about this third and perhaps most important rate request now in front of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio? Because it will have global impact. We're assuming that if the PUCO turns down First Energy, Davis-Besse, well, they will go to the legislature of First Energy, and then we'll have to see what happens. But if they are deprived of this rate hike, the Davis-Besse reactor, there's only one there, will shut. So what do you want to tell us about this third and perhaps most important rate request?
Well, the utilities are, in my mind, big money-making machines. And I don't want to trivialize that. But again, I want to say these people are providing us with a service that we care about. We want our electricity to turn on when we flip the switch. And for the most part, they've done a pretty good job of it. At the same time, there's a little bit of a sleight of hand going on with the bailouts. The First Energy company proposed its bailout before Duke and American Electric Power did. American Electric Power and Duke only proposed their bailouts because they don't want to be left out if the commission decides all of a sudden to be very generous to First Energy. So they put their hands up too, and the commission put their cases in front of the First Energy case. So there's a little bit of a sleight of hand in terms of the order of these things. In order to give the First Energy Company the bailout that it's asking for, the state of Ohio would have to reverse 15 years' worth of deregulation, which is in the law, and it's not particularly flexible. It's not like they have a real it's not like the Public Utilities Commission has the latitude to go and just say, oh, never mind, we're going to do something different this week, as much as they might like to. So I do not expect this case to go First Energy's way, but I do expect them to fight back with a challenge. They may go to the Ohio Supreme Court, which has never heard a case from an electric utility that they didn't like. And it's hard to say what's going to happen. What the context of this is really important to understand. 20 years ago, the United States started upgrading the Clean Air Act. 15 years ago, they pronounced the then standards for particulate pollutions and NOx and mercury to be inadequate. They created a standard for mercury. And about 4 years ago, the utility industry exhausted all of its legal challenges to those air pollution laws. So about 4 years ago, we knew that the industry was going to be shutting down a whole lot of coal plants right around the beginning of 2016. Because that's the year that the first one of these rules goes into effect. There's three or four major air pollution rules. The first one is the mercury rule. The mercury rule by itself wouldn't shut these plants down, but the four rules in context all pile up on coal, and they make it undesirable for the utilities to keep a lot of these really ancient, really inefficient coal plants that they do not use very often on the books. So what's going to happen in the next 3 years is that about a third of the coal capacity in the United States is going to shut down.
And well, how are we in that?
Yeah, Ohio's going to shut down about 5,000 megawatts out of, I think, 18,000 megawatts of coal is what we have right now. I'd have to go and check. The upshot of this is that the entire nation and the state of Ohio are all going to be pretty close to the limit of where we need to be with existing power plants and existing consumption of electricity. And First Energy has been playing what they think is a very sharp game on this. Starting in June of this year, all First Energy customers are going to have a fairly significant rate increase, which they're going to blame on these air pollution rules. But in fact, what the rate increase is a result of is First Energy's manipulation of an auction that occurred in 2012, 3 years ago. The Regional Planning Authority holds an auction every year for delivery of capacity 3 years out. It's way too complicated to talk about in person, let alone on the radio. But the long and short of it is that Ohio as a whole is going to spend about $1 billion more on electricity for the period from June 1st to May 31st of 2016 as a result of this auction that occurred. And then it's going to get, most of that rate increase is going to go away. First Energy is counting on getting a lot of mileage and maybe permission to build new coal plants, maybe a bailout for their old coal plants or their Davis Bessie. And a lot of other interested parties are going to be playing this for everything that it's worth. And what we need to do to protect ourselves is to insist on economic responsibility, that the Public Utilities Commission and the legislature stop doing harm until they have the data and they have presented it in a way that everybody can see. And when the data is presented, it will show that what they need to do is get out of the way of the 2008 efficiency and renewables standards and maybe strengthen them.
Yes, and also, I mean, you know, it just kills me to hear this, because you're saying essentially that because of the clean air regulations long overdue, coal capacity will shut down, and I assume not just in Ohio, but elsewhere around the Midwest especially. And here we are sitting with this huge wind resource in northern Ohio, and the governor comes in and makes it completely unusable. It's staggering to me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more.
And without any rationale whatsoever, and we haven't even begun to talk about solar energy in the state. Ohio is not viewed as a great resource for solar energy, but in southern Ohio, we have had major solar farms that have been proposed. We do have a major solar PV factory in Toledo, and, you know, it's nowhere in this state.
Let me take the last couple of minutes of the show to talk about.
Well, we have about two and a half, Ned, so you're going to have to speak. And you've been a spectacular guest, talking about really dry stuff and making it very, very clear. If you don't mind, I'm going to have you come back. This is an essential primer, not just for Ohio, but for all the country in terms of where we're going. So without my using – oh, and before I forget, Ned, give your particulars. Where can you be reached? Website, stuff like that. Where would you want listeners to contact you?
Ned.Ford@fuse.net, and my phone number is 513-600-4200. But I know that if you look me up on the internet, you'll find a phone number and an email address. It'll work.
Okay, so we've got two.
So,
and
really
what was that email again?
I want to, pardon?
Ned, email again, real quick.
Ned.Ford@fuse.net, F-U-S-E.
Okay.net. So you got a minute and a half. Go for it.
Okay. Okay. The important thing to understand about both wind and solar energy is that both industries have seen a 15% price drop every year for the last 20 years. Wind became competitive with fossil fuels in the year 2010, but it does so on the basis of which states have the best wind resource. The best wind resource in the country runs from North Dakota to Texas on the east side of the Rocky Mountains, and it comes our way. And it kind of peters out, but it's still pretty good here in Ohio. Photovoltaics has a very different footprint. They're wonderful in the Southwest, and they're pretty good in the Midwest. They're not so good in the Northeast, but the most important thing to understand about them is we don't count photovoltaics the right way, because photovoltaics produce electricity at the same time as air conditioners run. And that means that the price of electricity and the internal cost for the utility during the day is much higher when the solar panels are producing those. The state
That's
of
a good thing, and then we are really just
that. And the state of Wisconsin gets exactly the same amount of sun as the state of Ohio. We just haven't done that here yet. If we recognize the time of use value of solar energy, it will be cost effective here.
Amazing. And then, Ford, you've been spectacular about the driest stuff imaginable. I would like to have you back, folks in Ohio especially. Pay attention to this, but it's certainly of major importance nationwide. We will be starting back on the fight for renewable energy here in Ohio. And Ned, thanks again so much. We'll see you again next week, everybody, in Solartopia. And Ned, you'll be back. Take care.
Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.